Welcome back. I'm looking forward to the talk by Annalisa Panatti, who I met in Montreal in 3 years ago.
Wow, cool.
Maybe more. And in Montreal. Well, in Montreal, where she currently is. But she took her PhD in Paris, Orsay. And did a dissertation. Her dissertation was on spectral analysis of Hamiltonians in quantum field theory. And Christian Gérard was her supervisor, and she took a PhD in 2008. Mm-hmm. And since 2009, she has been maître de conf in associate professor at the Center for Theoretical Physics in Marseille, mm-hmm. Université de Toulon. And she she works on non-equilibrium statistical mechanics and quantum field theory, non-perturbative effects especially. And mm-hmm. Today her talk is on entropy and energy fluctuations in non-equilibrium quantum statistical mechanics. Please, Annalisa.
Okay, thank you, Dorothea, for this introduction. So indeed, today I'm talking about a subject in non-equilibrium quantum statistical mechanics. And I chose to, try to review, give an overview of some key ideas concerning the recent groundbreaking progress that has been done in non-equilibrium statistical mechanics in the last 30 years, hoping that everyone can bring back that part, even if we are all from different fields. And I'll tell the story from a very specific angle, which is the one that will allow me then to explain what is our contribution to the subject. It's a joint work with Tristan Benoit and Renaud Capat. So I like to start from the very beginning with a very, very quick review of what entropy means. I cannot wait a technical problem. No, that's okay. So you'll see why I do that. So what is the spirit? So the spirit is that we have a system with a huge number of particles. We cannot trace them one by one. So we describe the system through a sort of this macroscopic distribution of particles. So we say, better to see it as a probability measure on the phase space that give me how the particles are distributed in the phase space. Are they all on the corner or are they equally distributed in the entire space? So now the entropy tell us how many microscopic particle configuration correspond to that particular distribution. And so essentially it encodes how likely the distribution rho is. Okay, so how likely it is that all the particles are on a tiny corner, how likely it is that are equally distributed all over the phase space. So the variational principle tells us that what we observe in reality is the most likely setting, is the most likely distribution, which is the same as saying that is the one who maximizes the entropy. And the second law tells us that nature evolved from the less probable to the most probable, which is the same to say as entropy of an iterative system tends to increase until it reaches equilibrium. Okay. So think about that. So if we are in an equilibrium setting or in quasi-static process, then we are already reached this maximal entropy, that's a state distribution entropy. And then we tend to see that entropy always increase. But as far as you go to non-equilibrium, you think the system could pass through unlikely configuration of particle. So according to this picture, the second law is a statistical one, and there should always be non-zero probability that the entropy of an isolated system might, for a short amount of time, spontaneously decrease. And a fluctuation relation, this is the groundbreaking progress I was telling you about, quantify exactly how much is this probability. So we talk about now non-equilibrium. So first let me clarify when we talk about non-equilibrium, Entropy itself doesn't make necessarily sense anymore, but we still just talk about relative entropy when entropy increase. So if entropy tells you how much weight you would, you can think of entropy as a function of the Radon-Nikodym derivative with respect to the rho x dx with respect to dx. So how much weight do you give to a certain portion of space with respect to the back measure? And now you can still say how much weight did you give to a certain portion of space with respect to how much weight did you give before? And so this is encoded by saying that relative entropy is a function of the Radon-Nikodym derivative between two measures. So that still makes sense. You can still write that. And you can still talk about average entropy reduction. And you can write the law of the random variable that is that gives you the probability of having a certain entropy increase or an entropy decrease. So now you can have an entropy decrease, but new result of can go under the name of fluctuation relation tells you that the probability of having an entropy decrease with respect to the probability of having an entropy increase of the same size decay exponentially with time and with the size of this increase. Okay. So this is not important for my talk, but since we talk so much about symmetries, it was a panel on symmetry, let me mention that this relation can also be expressed as a symmetry. As a symmetry of what? As a symmetry of a certain function that you obtain as a Laplace transform of this probability measure. And it is a function which is largely used in probability large variation theory. Okay, so a little bit of a history. So this fluctuation relation was first discovered numerically in 93. By Evans, Cohen, and Morris, and then in the year that followed, theoretical explanation followed, one side by Evans, this guy, and Deborah Sears, the one in the middle, and on the other side by Galavotti and Cohen. Here I found a picture of Galavotti, didn't find a picture of Cohen. So that open, there is a parallel literature about work and with similar results. The name that you may have heard are Jarzyski and Crookes, and in that literature they also rediscovered the forgotten work of Buchov and Kozolev. So this opened a new era of research. There's been vast literature that relation have been studied in many models. They have been proven experimentally, and it has been proven they are universal. I mean, as far as you have a time reversal invariant underlying dynamics. And so they are now considered, so this established picture, you can consider them as a statistical refinement of the second law of thermodynamics. So it's a very, very fundamental law. If I convince you of that, then you understand that the next question people would ask, given this huge success that happened in the 90s, next question is, how do we generalize this to the quantum case? And that may seem simple, no? You just quantize, you take the object and you find the operator that corresponds to that and you study them. But that turned out to be an unimaginably difficult problem. And so here I'm trying to explain why, but it's maybe confused a little. So the first attempt was what one would call a naive quantization. Naive quantization is the first thing you would do. And as a matter of fact, is what these Russian forgotten guys did in the 70s and was tried again in the 90s. So if you work in the very, very simplifying setting where you can associate to entropy an operator, this is true almost never, but there are some very special cases you can do that, then this amounts to take the, what you are doing is you take the difference between S of time zero and S of time T, as this would be the entropy increase, and you consider the spectral measure associated to this operator. That would be the first thing you would do. And if you do that, then this theory doesn't give you the fluctuation relation. So it has to be considered a big failure. You don't have the second law of thermodynamics. It's terrible, terrible. You want the second law of thermodynamics. So it has been regarded as a huge success, as a huge achievement that Kurchan in 2000 have understood that where the problem was. And so at least 20 years later, we said it very quickly. So, so the problem was that measurement have been neglected. So the process of measurement at the fundamental level has to be taken into account. So he suggested instead of the first thing you would look at, you take something else. So you take a different probability distribution, which you obtain by measuring twice. And then I will describe in the detail in the next slide. So if you do that, that leads to a theory that indeed satisfies the fluctuation relations. So this was a really huge success. People were very happy. That's end of this part of the story. So because before I go to the next part of the story, let me also mention, since this conference is frontiers between mathematics and physics, that there has been a parallel line of thinking that is more based on a mathematical point of view. And that's the reason is to try to identify which mathematical object you have placed the role in the quantum case of what in the classical case was the Radon-Nikodym derivative. Right, that fundamentally associated to entropy, entropy production, entropy increase. And that was identified with the so-called relative model of operator, which some of you may be familiar with. So I know that some of you are familiar with modular theory, kind of state, sister algebras, and so on. And for those who are not, just want to underline that this kind of theory pre-existed, this kind of research in statistical quantum mechanics. It was a theory, was mathematically developed for a purely abstract reason to study sister algebra. So this idea will go back to Araki in the 70s, and then in this context was pushed forward by Jaksik and Pillay. Okay, so, now, if it's clear, or at least a little bit clear, our result, so our contribution to the field, is to be a little bit, if you like, as the party pooper, and say that actually this huge success, having the second law of thermodynamics in quantum case, comes at a very high price, and a high price is the first law of thermodynamics. So I say that in the most dramatic way to capture your attention. So in what I will attempt to explain in the remaining part of the talk is that energy is conserved, it's still conservation of energy, but the energy balance equation is messed up by the fact that you are considering the measurement in a very heavy way. Okay. And that's what I'm going to try to explain now. So in order to do so, let me try to explain what these two-time measurement statistics are in a very simple and concrete way. This is actually something very simple. They correspond to the fact that you have a quantum system and you measure twice. So let's see, I know by experience that, before I go on, so maybe I should mention that this difference between these two attempts may have not been understood before in the last, 100 years of quantum mechanics. Before, if you consider the averages or the variance of this measure, then you obtain the same things. It's only when you look at the finer statistical property of this measure that you see differences between this approach and the Kurchan approach. Okay, so two-time measurement statistics. So let me describe them in the most simple setting. The simple setting is that I take confined system, but confined system in the sense that the Hilbert space is finite dimensional. So an observable in Hilbert space is the matrix that can be diagonalized, and let me call AJ the eigenvalues, and PAJ is the associated spectral projectors. What is the two times measurement statistics? It's simply the fact that you measure once times zero, let the system evolve, and measure again at time t. So the first time you have an outcome aj, then you have an outcome ak, and you take the probability that you measure a difference equal to phi. Let's really go into the equation. So this is very simple. The first time you measure, you will have an outcome aj with a probability given a trace of rho against the spectral projection on aj. And that's, we know. Then the important thing is after you do that, the state change, because now you know that you are in the you have measured AK, so the system change. And so the second time you will measure an outcome AK with a probability given by trace of PAK against the state you are in. Which state are you? Well, in this state, evolve at MT. Okay. You want the probability of measuring a difference phi. Well, you just sum over all the possibilities that give you the phi. And then this expression simplifies a little, but that's it. So it's not much more. So what is important for me to make you notice is say that the measurement perturbs the state. And the initial state reduced to another state, which I call a rho after measurement, okay? And another thing I wanted to notice is that this probability measure is supported on energy difference. So more or less it will be supported in the interval, which is twice the norm of A. And you have no reason to think it is smaller, right? So in generic case, you have that this measure is supported in something which is as big as the norm of twice the norm of operator. Did you hear me well? I have a message.
There was a short interruption, but Annalisa, you have only roughly 3 minutes left if you allow for 5 minutes discussion. Of course, you can take some time of the 5 minutes discussion.
I had 15 minutes. I'm 15 minutes in the talk, so I try to wrap it up. So, okay. Now, if it's as clear as let me quickly go. So now we look at conservation laws, okay? So at a classical system, you have, I can see it as a random variable on the phase space with probability measure rho, okay? So if I have a conserved quantity, then I have the fact that this conserved quantity I have this equality AT minus A equal to BT minus B, and so that's yields to the identity, since it's the same random variable, it was the identity of the law. And then you say, this is obvious, why are you telling us that? And because now I took the quantum case, and then I have an identity as operator. In identity as operator, then yields identity of a spectral measure, but does not yield to the identity of the two-time measurement framework, because when I measure A, it's not the same as I measure B. So now if I think of the fact that I am having internal energy and I'm at equilibrium, and then I perturb the system, so I will have that, let me go directly here, that on one hand, I have the fluctuation of internal energy, and on one hand, I have a two-time measurement statistic for this perturbation. So this one can be very small, and this one can be very big. It can be like something which is, as I say, if you take an infinite standard system, then you have something which is under an entire line, supporting an entire real line, and then we have and more than that, you can have a measure which really is not exponentially decaying. The tails are not exponentially decaying, it's as habitat. Okay, so our contribution, so let me emphasize this once again. So you can have in this business that you do little work, almost zero work on the system, and you have huge energy fluctuations. So that can happen. And our contribution is to say that this does happen. And that is related to a very fundamental problem in quantum mechanics. I skip directly to that part. So our example is a two-level system coupled to a Fermi field. And if I compute these two quantities, I compute the energy fluctuation, I will have, even if I take a perturbation which is extremely small in norm, then I can still have that this fluctuation of the internal energy as huge. Why? What is the underlying picture? The underlying picture is that the system when, between one measurement and another jump from a state of low energy to a state of a higher energy. And this is controlled by this function f, which is typically a function which has a certain ultraviolet irregularity. Okay. So what controls the jumps that you can have is the ultraviolet irregularity of an interaction, which is encoded by how the form factor decays at infinity. Okay, so that's our contribution, our theorem. We have more general theorem, but the other way around when things go well, but this is not very interesting. This is my main message. So let me summarize. So second law, this has been this huge breakthrough in non-equilibrium statistical electronics with refinement of a second law. This I hope was clear to for everyone, no matter what field you are. To do go to have that in quantum mechanics, you need to go to the two-time measurement framework, not to what you usually do. You have to really consider the fact you measure twice the system, the state change, and then you measure a second time. So you have really to consider the role of measurement in quantum mechanics, which has always been a huge problem. And then you have also this law, but you have a price to pay. If you go to this two-time measurement picture, a huge price to pay that since the system jumps from one measurement to another, and it can jump as much as it wants. So this is controlled not by the norm of the perturbation, but that is ultraviolet irregularity. Then you can have huge energy fluctuations, which mess up the so-called energy balance equation. Okay, that was my message, and thank you for this time, for your attention.
Thank you, Annalisa. I see a question, Zumati.
Hi, thanks for a really very nice talk, very, very interesting. The negative result, I think, is also very interesting. You know, have you thought of, I mean, we think of black hole thermodynamics as very fundamental in quantum gravity. And of course, we, you know, in the classical picture, everything is fine. And we, even if you think about fluctuations, like you say, there are these nice fluctuation theorems that tell you that everything decays exponentially, etc. I, by the way, didn't know that this work had an earlier avatar in the 1970s, so that was really interesting. But it's really interesting that in the quantum case, because we expect, of course, in the case of black hole thermodynamics, that there will be fluctuations. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the case of black holes, if you had internal energy suddenly becoming huge, you could go from a microscopic to a macroscopic black hole, for example. So I'm just very, it's very interesting. It seems to be another example of things that can go, you know, yes. Anyway, thank you very much for this. It was very interesting.
So I like to comment on that. So first I want to reassure you that this problem that when you measure twice you have two fluctuations does not affect the averages. So the when you look at averages and when you look at variance, that's maybe something that I say very quickly when you're here. So okay. So if you look at the spectral measure are the same. So if you look at averages, if you look at variance, it is the same. So you can still, so this problem, in fact, when you measure twice, everything explodes. It it's reduced, no? So you can still be reassured it's not everything is messed up. To go to write, even to write this thing in a curve space time, if you want to do it, as may not be appear very well from this talk, but I am a mathematician, so I try to do things in a proper way. So you cannot even define, even the definition of temperature in curve space time, I think, is a subject of debate. There's some work, I think, maybe. I think I'm work of Buchholz or Pinamonti. I don't know if this rings a bell. And so it is very difficult to say how, what, so I think it's too early to really implement this idea in curve space time. So at least I personally would first like to at least understand what temperature is. And then we can talk about non-equilibrium statistical mechanics. And so you could say that in the first time is more similar situation to non-equilibrium than to equilibrium. So.
Thank you. There's another question, Maria.
Hi, Annalisa.
Hi.
Thank you for this very nice talk. My question is the following. What if I work on a system that I can only access the measurement of entropy once, probably in the whole time evolution of this system. And I want to infer if there was a criticality behavior within the evolution of this system. If I don't have this possibility of a two-time measurement function, do I still get a bound or information about this criticality behavior in the system or not?
What do you mean by criticality?
Well, if I theoretically, if I modeled the evolution of a system by following the size of entropy of the system, and I find out that the entropy fluctuates theoretically, and I want to check that experimentally, then it turns out that I cannot measure this entropy or these quantities relevant for this system, quantum system, twice. I can sort of do it once only. when you say it, I understand this two-time measurement is actually two times in the evolution, time evolution of the system. I can do space measurements, but I cannot do time measurements.
So that's the entire, I think, the entire message of all this this part. No. So what people have been starting to understand is that you have to be very, very, but that's something which is at the beginning. So the thing, I don't have the answer, but how can I say this? You need to be very careful. How do you model the measurement in your theory? Okay. So if you look at averages, is that okay? More or less, no matter how you model it, you will get the same result. So as soon as you look at the finer property of these measures, which most of the time we don't do, that's kind of new. That's kind of recent because there's I think for the quantum case, we don't have access to a proper experiment yet for in the flat case. So this is more theoretical considerations. And so what people are working in to understand how should you model the measurement. So, and for example, there's a huge community working on what's called indirect measurements. So that you measure an associated system, you measure that one, you have control of that system, you're not messing up with the other one, so you don't have this problem. This is not something that I would say that the scientific community has completely understood as in the whole. So I put myself in the people who do not understand it completely. So that I think that the question of your answer is open. I'm not able to give you an answer, but because this does not be completely understood by anyone.
I think I would like to defer the rest of the discussion to the remote room because we're running, we're already beyond the break. And so I would like to, sorry, but I would like to thank Annalisa again for a very nice talk.
Thank you.